Okay, so this is me. Link server 2013 exam 70-336 and 70-337. My name is Bob Wrench. Easier way to remember the pronunciation of my name when you see Wrench. It's pronounced like the tool. My middle name is Allen. So, and that's the truth. I got lucky. I am Bob Allen Wrench. I have a sister-in-law that loves giving me a hard time about that. I'm fine with it. I could have got my grandfather's first names instead of their middle names. Then I'd be Siegfried Francis. I'll take Robert Allen, trust me. But I'm with Centric Training. We're a Microsoft Gold Partner out of Leawood, Kansas, the suburb of Kansas City. It's a part of the Kansas City metropolitan area. I personally, I guess I did put my home. That's my home. I live in Lawrence. I work in Leawood. I live in Lawrence. So sometimes I get the two confused because it seems like I'm always working. So, yeah, that's the home. That we got a university there. They seem to do okay in one particular sport. But, was that, a hiss? Okay. Not popular with somebody. Anyway, what we're going to talk about is just the objectives. We'll get into some strategies. There's some of this stuff, to be honest with you, I don't know that I need to give you guys a bunch of tips on, hey, here's how you study and here's how you take an exam, because you're probably already certified in something or else you wouldn't be here. So I don't know that we need to take a lot of time talking about exam strategies, but I do want to talk about some of the topics. Having done Exchange and having done Link, the current MCSE certification is probably one of the most difficult I've ever come across. And I'm a guy that's taken 46 different exams over the course of the last 20 years or so. My first certification, everybody's first certification is always their most difficult one. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because sometimes you don't get that first one on the first try. And for me, it was Windows for Workgroups back in 1995. And that one was a rough one. This is close. And doing Exchange, doing Link, you have to have some cross-pollination between those two, because you're going to see some Link questions on the Exchange exam. You're going to see some Exchange questions on the Link exam. The other thing I would warn you about is that it's not just about Link server. You have to know a little bit about the cloud version, because you have to worry about hybrid deployments and some of that, and federation services, because all of that seems to kick in together. So the basic thing here, you get the MTA, the MCP, the associate level, you get the expert level, you get the master level. So you get Microsoft Certified Solutions Associate, you get into the MCSE. Once again, that's back, but they've renamed it. Had to avoid some of the issues with having the word engineer in a title, because some states really take issue with having a business card that says engineer unless you're a professional engineer. And then you get the Microsoft Certified Solutions Master on that side. All in all, basically, you've got a bunch of certifications out there that all are more meaningful now than they've ever been. And I'm not just saying that because I'm presenting at a Microsoft conference. They mean something now. These exams are worthwhile. These certifications are worthwhile. So you get everything from BI to data platform, web applications, Metro-style apps, although I don't think we're supposed to call it Metro anymore. Desktop infrastructure, server infrastructure, obviously private cloud. And we're getting into things here that have to do with, obviously, unified communication. So today for MCSE for Communication, this is focused on Link. You have to start off with 410, 411, and 412. Those are on the server side. You can take the 417 roll-up exam, which is the route that I went, because I'm a Microsoft certified trainer. You know, so we have to keep our certifications up to date. And for me, taking the 417 roll-up exam was the way to go. But for somebody that is, you know, has a need to get certified now and you haven't been certified in the past, going with the 410, 411, and 412 is probably... 417, I found it tough. I had somebody else tell me that they didn't think it was very difficult at all. But that's when you are faced with a difficult exam and you have somebody else tell you that they didn't think it was that tough at all, it's kind of like having a thin person telling you that they need to go on a diet. You know, so I found it challenging because the 417 in itself, you've got three different sections, and you've got to score 700 or better on each section, or else you don't pass. So you can score 800s, 900s on two sections and score a 680 on one section and not pass it. So 417 could be a difficult exam for a lot of folks. What I would tell you is that if you're new to it, you might be better off taking 410, 411, and 412 as individual exams. Because sometimes taking a longer exam that's more focused on one area is easier to pass than a roll-up exam that covers all three. So that's just my advice to somebody that might be pursuing certification for the first time. So 410, 411, 412, get those wrapped up, and then you start getting into 336 and 337. And like I said, these can be challenging exams. I would say prep for both of them at the same time. Obviously, when you've got one area of subject matter, you have to know some of the 337 stuff from my perspective to pass 336. The thing we're going to run into is the fact that there's not a whole lot of third-party study materials out there for these examinations already. To be frank, you're going to be buried in TechNet Library. And you know what? That's the single best resource you've got out there right now. I know that Microsoft Press has been putting out some really nice study guides for like the 410, 411, and 412, but for Link, we haven't seen those coming from Microsoft Press yet. So, or other third parties, to be honest. You've got the Microsoft official curriculum. Those will get you part of the way there. But as someone that teaches that stuff, I don't think that they get you exactly where you need to be prepared for those certification exams. What you need to do is take a look at the individual exam requirements and then look it up. Everybody has a different way of studying for exams. I'm different. I'll admit that my study habits are probably going to be, some of y'all might think of them as being kind of bizarre, because you've got tactile learners, the ones that have to sit down and do things. With this exam, you have to do that. These two exams, you have to sit down, you have to know it, you have to have done it. You have to set up your lab, you have to install it, you have to set up users. You've got to configure everything from setting up the instant messaging side of it to managing the enterprise voice side, making sure that you got all the normalization rules down. You're going to have to do all those things, setting up your policies, no doubt about it. You have to have read material. Now, here's where I'm weird. I will go through, and I will go through the TechNet articles, and I record myself paraphrasing what the procedures are in each of those things. Because I know I'm different, because most people are not aural learners. You guys know what I'm talking about? Most people, when they hear something, they only retain about 20% of what they hear. I'm different that way. I do a better job if I hear it. My wife thinks I'm a wonderful listener. But that's just, it works for me. It may not work for you. For some people, going through the TechNet articles, reading those individual library entries and writing them down, making your own notes, transcribing them into a sentence that is your sentence, a process that you are used to, flowcharting things out. When it says step one, step two, step three, maybe you want to do a flowchart. That might work better for you. Okay? So you just got to find a way to own it and make it your own. Okay, so what we have getting into with the first exam, you have to understand working with all the individual tools, understanding the central sites, understanding the branch sites, how they are related, what services need to be replicated between the two, installing and deploying the servers. Obviously, that's going to be important. Then we get into high availability and disaster recovery, making sure you set up your survivable branch appliances, survivable branch servers. And then you get into remote external access. What are you going to do there about managing tying in with external communication, whether it's coming from the phone system, your public switch telephone networks, tying in with external instant messaging solutions, whether you're tying in with Google, whether you're tying in with Yahoo, whether you're tying in with Jabber, all of those things are going to be important. Unified messaging, tying the thing in with Exchange. One of the new topics that we have to address, persistent chat. Now you're able to keep track of historical conversations when you're using the instant messaging system, so you have to understand the issues about getting that configured, as well as backing it up and archiving it, because we might have compliance issues when it comes to those conversations. We have to be able to look those up. Data compliance kind of ties in with some of the persistent chat, but it also ties in with other areas of that. Working with the clients, obviously, one of the things that you're going to have to pay attention to is not just, you know, here's the master link client. You have to worry about down-level clients. You have to worry about which web browsers when you are using a conferencing client that is not part of the norm. And then, of course, moving from legacy versions of Link or OCS 2007 R2 to Link 2010 to Link 2013, tying all of those together. So, yeah, you're going to have to know it. You've got to know your ports and protocols. You have to know migration scenarios, and that just doesn't include the server-based scenarios. It also includes hybrid and cloud-based deployments. Then you start getting into, obviously, the 2007 solutions, and then the various tools that you can use to monitor and troubleshoot Link. Active Directory, gosh, does this thing tie in with Active Directory? Everything does. We know that. So we start getting into tying the thing in with Exchange. Excuse me. Managing your hybrid deployments with Office 365. Moving things, migrating things up. Once again, managing your network bandwidth is always going to be important. And then telecommunication standards, understanding those as well. Obviously, we have to know the SIP protocol. You know, what makes SIP unique? You know, just that ability that we can open up a SIP-based session that's primarily focused on instant messaging and then doing other things as part of an active SIP session where other users can come in and participate in a text-based session. And then you can add voice and then you can add video without having to stop and restart that session. You know, that's what kind of makes SIP so unique in the world of telecommunication. Okay, this part of it, okay, I'm not going to drone on about some of these things, but obviously we have to be aware of the questions themselves and time management. So one of the things that I've found when you're taking a look at a question, is there anybody here that's never taken a Microsoft certification exam? So you guys know what you're looking for. You know that one of those answers that pops up is going to be completely wrong right off the bat. You're going to look at it, notice, and say, yeah, that doesn't work. And then you've got to take a look at the other few questions that pop up or the other answers that pop up and assess whether or not that pertains to the question. It's going to come down to one sentence that pops up in that question that's going to make the difference between whether an answer is right or wrong. And here's the thing that I think we all understand is that there's multiple ways of doing just about anything. But Microsoft's looking for one particular answer. Exactly, right? Yeah, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. You guys know what I'm talking about. So, right. What might be a real world best practice and what works best, you know, if you're out there, the customer says, I want it this way, and you find out it works that way, and it's quicker to get it done that way, may not be what Microsoft defines as being the best practice. So it's the Microsoft answer. So you do have to watch out for that. 2 to 3 minutes per question, yeah, I get that. You know what I tell you very often? Mark them, move on. Follow your gut. You know, that's always helped me out. Yeah, I've seen too many instances with my students over the years where they dwell on one question too long, and they probably had it right the first time. But something else kicked in, something else, think, oh no, this is, they're being tricky here. No, usually not. Occam's razor, trust your gut. You probably had it right the first time. So if you don't know something that definitely makes a difference, something that you reread in the question, leave it alone. Go with your gut. So the other things that we start getting into, there's often multiple ways of doing something. We get that. Focus on what Microsoft is really looking for. Wow, one of the things that is big right here, this bulleted point right here, know what has to be done via PowerShell. We know that we've got the administrative center. And we know that there's any number of things that we can get done in there. But as you all know, there everything that you can do in the administrative center, you can do in PowerShell. Because it's basically what the administrative center is. It's a launch pad. But there are some things we have to do in PowerShell. And that's what one of the things we have to focus on. But the other thing that we have to worry about is, and this is frustrating to me. It's frustrating to me because when I'm doing stuff in PowerShell, I'm hitting the man files. You know, I'm hitting /?, or get help, and I'm taking a look at all of the parameters, I'm taking a look at the examples. I mean, I would say that most of us at some point, we take a look at PowerShell commands, we look at the example, and we're reverse engineering what we need to do. That's how I learned to script in the first place. I took a look at other people's examples and adapted them to what I needed to do. That is so frustrating to me when I'm taking an exam and I can't look up the help file, because in the real world, we can. That's what we do. We take a look at what we've done before. So, yeah, you're going to have to know more PowerShell than what you had to know in the past. We also have to know about policies and whether and the way the policies are being applied. And policies that we work with here, we do so much that it looks so much like what we do with group policy objects in Active Directory. You've got things that are applied at the universal level or at the domain level. I don't do too much at the site level when it comes to group policies. But Link, you're going to do more at the site level. And then you get closer to the user. You start dealing with pools. You start dealing with individual users. And as you get closer to the user, the policies you define are going to prevail. So that's one thing that I'd tell anybody you got to take away from all of this stuff. The individual policies that you assign to individual users are going to prevail over something that you might define at the global level, at the organizational level. So take that with you. But you got to know your common PowerShell commandlets. You got to know the syntax. And I know how frustrating that can be. I'm wondering what I just hit. I must have bounced this thing off my chin. Okay, so objectives. We start getting to planning, designing the topology. We have to worry about features. We have to worry about configuring Link. We have to worry about resiliency. All of these things you have to crack down. And then what I would tell each of you to do, jump into TechNet and take a look at each of these topics and study those individual topics the way that best suits you. Then we start getting into support infrastructure, certificates. This one will make you break you. I think we all recognize the importance of certificates and how those have to be deployed in our enterprise environments. Load balancing and DNS, watch out for that, because one of the things you're going to see is that the way we're dealing with load balancing and DNS today in 2013 is different from what we did in 2010, very different from what we did in OCS 2007 R2. So watch out for those. Storage has changed a little bit, and now we've got more incorporation of IPv6. When we get into the server side of it, know the roles. Roles have changed. So once again, we've got some things that have been modified going from 2010 to 2013. Hardware requirements, yeah, we've got to know about those. Obviously, that's going to be one of the things that pops up very early on in your TechNet articles. Archiving and monitoring has changed significantly since 2010. Requirements, dependencies, large heavy cart going down the hallway right next to me. High availability data, setting up data recovery, all of those things are going to be important as well. Branch off a side site, failover, like I said, every single one of these things. Break out a notebook. Go get yourself a ring binder. You know, write those things down in a way that suits what the way you talk and the way you think. Take what Microsoft writes, translate it to something that you understand, and do that and set up your own, create your own notes for that. And then edge servers as well. Certificate requirements, port requirements, load balancing, all of that stuff. Okay, so here we start getting into some sample questions that we're going to see. And these are all samples. These are not going to be exactly what you see on the exam, but this kind of gives you an idea about the content. In order to provide complete external access, what server or servers need to be deployed on the perimeter network? So we start getting into link access, edge server, Microsoft Web Edge server, a reverse proxy server, a link edge server, or a link edge server and a reverse proxy server. Well, these are the options that are available to you. Now, what you're also going to see as you start diving into my PowerPoints is that in the speaker notes, I've added in a link that directs you to something, you know, this exact TechNet article that describes what this does and why it does it. Okay? But that's just an example that's pertinent to this particular question. Next, you're a Microsoft Link Administrator, and you want to add new session border controller as a gateway for your mediation server. Which tool will you use to accomplish this task? Okay. Now, this starts getting into some of the newer features. Watch out for this, because the answer that you may have used in for Link Server 2010 is going to be different than the answer you're going to be implementing here for Link Server 2013 because of some of the changes to the way that 2013 is going to be operating. But what you're going to end up doing is starting off with a topology builder to get things done. But there were some changes there going from 2010 to 2013 when integrating SBCs. Then, which Microsoft Link pool can take advantage of DNS load balancing without the need for any hardware load balancing applications in all the scenarios? And what we see there is that the mediation server pool is where things start kicking in to help out with that. So one of the things that you're going to see in 2013 is just a difference in the way DNS load balancing integrates with Link. You know, the way I initially worked with it, all too often, I was dealing with hardware-based load balancing. You know, I wanted to have an appliance on the front end. But now Microsoft have made some changes, emphasizing using Microsoft products to get things done rather than using a hardware-based solution. So that's one of the things that you want to take into consideration. You know, this one of the things we talked about, you know, the idea about the Microsoft answer, okay? There's a reason why this gets presented up here. So when Microsoft's providing you with a solution, rather than going with a hardware-based tool, go with a software-based solution because that's what is expected, okay? Does that make sense? We talked earlier about what you're going to do out in the real world, and what are you going to do in the real world in a situation like that? If you've got an extra F5 box sitting around, you know exactly what I'm saying. But when you can use a DNS-based solution rather than a hardware-based solution, then you got to go with what we're presenting here. And here it's specifically saying without the need for any hardware load balancing appliances. So we can go with the DNS load balancing solution in that case and tie it to the mediation server pool. So next area of concern. Once again, we've got to take a look at all of these different subsections that are being presented on the exam objectives. And what I, once again, tell you, take a look at TechNet, start digging in, make your own notes, and start getting into all the various areas about design conferencing, the design remote and external access, all of that's going to be important. You've got to watch out for new protocols that are being supported and emphasized as part of Link's extensibility when you want to connect out to the rest of the world. mobile push directors, you're going to find that the director role has been modified somewhat. How many of you have taken the new Link Server 2013 course? Have any of you taken it? It's the 20336. Sorry, the exam is 70. The courses are 20. Yeah. How'd that work? How'd that go?
I thought the content was terrible. And I passed the 36, being 15 on that one, but I missed the 37 by 1.
Okay. But
you.
Yeah.
That wasn't too bad, but
my experience with, you know, because I remember the Link 2010 exams and the exam objectives and then going to the 2013. It was, they've really changed the structure of the courses because the original, the first course in 2010 included Enterprise Voice. Whereas this one, when you start getting into the Link 2013 courses, the first course deals very little with Enterprise Voice. Nothing about normalization. You're not doing anything there handling voice communication. You know, why do we even have headsets, it almost seems like? You know, you get some things, some voice prompts, but you're not emphasizing that much at all. But anyway, that's kind of off track. Covering the user experience, contact list, client versions, privacy settings, music on hold, client devices, et cetera. And then we start getting into support for analog devices, VDI, et cetera. Planning migration for previous versions, also planning the end user training. All of these, once again, each of these subsections you're going to have to take a look at, dive into them in TechNet, and get them down. So then we start getting back into other things. At what levels can voice policies be applied in order to enable or disable particular call features? And what we see is that it's all of them. You don't do any policies that are applied at the organizational unit level. But we do worry about things at the global level, the site level, and the individual user level, and each of them are pertinent. And each of, you know, we apply things at the global level first. But as we get closer to the user, the policies can override what's handled at the global level. So global, followed by site, followed by the individual user policies, and each of those are going to be critical. What internal DNS record is required for the auto-discovery of the Microsoft Link server for the Microsoft Link client in the finleytech.lcl local domain? And this ties in with some of the things we do early on with building the topology out, but also setting up DNS. So when we start taking a look at this, we know that we've got a SIP internal TLS dot underscore TCP. Now, some of these others, when we take a look at it, it's specifically dealing what internal DNS record. So we know we're dealing with something that is internal. And we see that we've got, internal external federation. Well, external TLS is obviously a distractor. You've got federation TLS. Well, we're talking about something internal. And if you're doing something internal, do you have to worry about federation? And then we get to the last one, and the difference here is going to be based on which protocol, TLS versus TCP. And we've got to worry about TCP. And if you have some experience having set the thing up, you know that TCP is going to be the primary protocol because TLS is dependent upon TCP in the first place. Okay? Then we start getting into the area where we have to worry about deploying and configuring. And we have to worry about managing our topology. You're going to be spending quite a bit of time with Topology Builder and understanding how that tool works. And it's important. So managing the various connections, mediation, service trunks, gateways, the various roles. We have to worry about edge deployment. We have to worry about the next big subsection, configuring conferencing. Being able to support the various clients that are out there, managing the various policies as to who's going to be able to connect and when, what are the responsibilities of the person that manages conferencing. When we have done an upgrade from OCS 2007 R2 to Link Server 2013, and we've already got conferences scheduled, what's going to get carried over, what's not going to get carried over? Managing all the aspects, conferencing regions, dial-in access, meeting configuration, and your meeting policies, and then also managing remote and external access there as well. Persistent chat. Now, this is one of those new topics that we have to spend a little bit of time on because, once again, this is something that's new. We have to worry about things such as when we're setting up persistent chat, how do we manage the various rooms that we're configuring? Who's going to gain access to what? How can we restrict who has access to the various persistent chat topics? So we have categories and scope we have to take a look at, rooms and access, server policy, the legacy endpoints, any additional tools that we're bringing into it. And then we have to worry about all the various clients that we're supporting, the security issues pertaining to each of those clients. Then we get into analog, phone edition, mobile device policies, and then using VDI for the link users as well. Migration, you're going to be spending a little bit of time obviously talking about that, and that's going to something that's going to come up on both sides of it, both exams. So we have to worry about, you know, which versions you can come across. You can go two revs back. So that's one of the reasons why you see me talk about Link Server 2010 as well as OCS 2007 R2, because that's as far back as you're going to be able to pull things forward. Moving those legacy users across, how you manage that, managing your configurations, migrating those, as well as CMS, file share data, then you've got high availability and making sure that you can fail over between your various sites and making sure that you've got ongoing connectivity, site failover, managing the SQL mirroring is what we're going to be dependent upon for managing the database side of it, and then we get into voice resiliency and the user experience there as well. So once again, we get back into the idea of taking a look at sample questions. Your network contains an Active Directory domain. The domain contains 500 user accounts. You deploy Link Server 2013 on the network. You need to allow all users to sign into the Link Server 2013 and initiate instant messaging conversations. Which link management shell commands would you use? And this one's a pretty good question when you want to take a look at the way PowerShell is going to work, because we know that we're going to be piping something. We're going to be gathering information about all of the users and then piping that into something else. So this one is actually probably one of the easier ones or easier types of questions that you might come across. Get CS80 user, because we know that's what we're doing. We're taking a look at all of the users that are participating, and then piping that to the enable CS user commandlet. That one's fairly straightforward. But that's not to de-emphasize some of the other things. You're going to want to spend considerable time taking a look at all the various commandlets, because some of them are going to be, take a look at what the other options are. Okay, using the get AD user commandlet, the top one. Well, we know it's not AD user. It has to be CS80 user. That's one of the things that you have to take away from this. It has to do with all of the users that are participating in our messaging environment. And then pipe that to a set CS user commandlet. Well, you're not making a modification to an existing profile that's enabled. What we're doing is we're doing the enabling in the first place. Use the get credential commandlet. Hello, what? That doesn't make any. There's your distractor. That's the one that's, you look at that one and go, no. So we know we can blow that one off right away. And this one, last one, D, get CS user commandlet and pipe the result to the enable CS client policy. That doesn't, policies have little to do with services. They have more to do with managing the permissions and rights after something's already been set up. So that doesn't make any sense to me at either. So the C should be fairly obvious after you become comfortable with the PowerShell commandlets that are popping up. Let's see. What else do we have here? You have deployed Link Server 2013 and you need to meet the following requirements. Users must be prevented from creating conferences that have more than 20 invitees. Department managers must be able to create conferences that have as many as 300 invitees. So we know that we're probably going to have a something global, a global policy, and then we'll have to have something that's a little bit closer to those users. So when we take a look at this one a little bit deeper, we're going to be working with the global conferencing policy, and then we'll have the individual user conferencing policies to overwrite the global conferencing policies and assign that to those department managers and get that done. You've deployed Link Server 2013. You need to meet the following requirements. You need to prevent all users from using Microsoft Link 2013 to transfer files that have an XLSX file extension. So obviously we are filtering. Are we filtering files or are we filtering URLs in this case? So taking a look at the top one, edit the global URL filter settings. That one doesn't seem to fit. Global file filter settings. I think we're on a good start there. And then topology, what? Topology builder for this? That doesn't seem to fit. Yeah, there you're right. That's the one I take a look at and go, you know. And then using the link management shell, run the set CS file transfer filter configuration commandlet. I think that one's going to nail it down. What do you guys think? Okay. Now, here we go. Persistent chat. Love persistent chat. Actually, I do. I'm a fan of it. Because one of the things that I'm getting older. I don't quite sometimes remember what I talked about with somebody the day before or if they sent me a URL through an instant message. I can't remember those things right off the top of my head. So it's nice to be able to pull that stuff up. You've configured a persistent chat pool in your Link implementation. Your company requires that only the sales department can see the sales-related rooms. Additionally, individual sales teams from different countries need to have their own private chat rooms. Now, this is something this is real-world stuff that you're probably going to have to deal with, especially in an international corporation, because you're going to have people talking about different things in different languages. And sometimes you get somebody from the U.S. that's dealing with people in Belgium and Sweden. Well, you know what they say. If you speak two languages, you're bilingual. If you speak three languages, you're trilingual. If you speak one language, you're an American. The Americans are smiling a little bit. Okay, so the guys from foreign countries are going, yeah, exactly. So anyway, taking a look at this, we have to create a category. Start off by doing that. Make sure that all the sales members are going to be a member of that category. And then from there, we can create chat rooms for each country and then give those members from those countries access to that particular room. The second one, create chat rooms for each sales team. Make all sales staff members of each room. That one doesn't really quite meet the requirements that we've defined up above. And then create a category for the sales department, then create a child category for each country. Make all members of the sales department members of the sales category. And then each country's staff members of... Yeah, that one seems... My problem with this D answer is that they're trying to do everything all in one shot, and you've got to pick two best answers. So really, going with A and C seems to be the best fit for what we're trying to accomplish here. Create the category for the sale, and then create a child category for each country. Well, we don't... Make all members of the sales department members of the sales category. That one's... Boy, that's a really long answer. Create chat rooms for each country with the default permissions. Not really necessary. That isn't going to be appropriate because the default permissions aren't going to get the job done in this case. You have a Microsoft Link pool named pool01.finleytech.lcl, which includes server 01 and server 02. You wish to add server 03 to this pool. What procedure would you follow? Sorry, my apologies for the grammar. Choose three options. Each choice represents part of the solution. So taking a look at these. Now, this is what you have to worry about when you get a question like this, is that what you might encounter. I got to make sure I get my CYA comment in there. You're going to see, you might see these as a stack of things on the left-hand side. You've got to drag these over to the right-hand side in the right order. So watch out for things like these. I call this a procedural question, because not only do you have to pick the right letters, but when you drag and drop these from column A into column B, you have to make sure you get them in the right order. Now here, we're okay because of the way they're being presented. From the Link Server 2013 Topology Builder, add servers 3 to the pool and then publish the topology. From server 03, run the deployment wizard and choose install or update to Link Server System. Then update your load balancing solution from pool 01 finleytech.lcl to include server 03. But you're going to have to watch out for these when you see them pop up. Okay, next we start getting into managing operations and data resiliency. And we have to worry about troubleshooting the Link environment, logging, failed installations, event viewer, OCS logger, best practice analyzer, name resolution. You know, you have to take a look at all the tools that you have in your kit. And you have to know which tool do you use in which situation. You have to worry about managing the environment as well, enabling and moving Link users, RBAC, devices, configuring the address book, worrying about the environmental health, being able to generate the reports that you need so that you can have those handy, working with synthetic transactions as a troubleshooting device, testing your test commandlets, core reliability, service health, CMS replication status, managing your data, making sure that you can recover. And then we also get into monitoring and archiving as well, because we have to worry about making sure that we're compliant with whatever rules we have in place, deploying monitoring reports, call data, call details, quality of the experience, managing your jitter and jabber issues that pop up, archiving, exchange, and the policies that pop up there as well. So here we start getting into another subsection here. Deploying Microsoft Link monitoring requires which of the following actions to be completed? We've got two of them. Create the monitoring database in the Link topology and publish the topology. Installing the Link monitoring server, deploying a SQL server, or installing Microsoft message queuing service on the Link monitoring server. Well, in this case, we have to worry about A and C. We have to create the monitoring database. And then we have to make sure we've got SQL Server there to accept that information. You've been asked to monitor your Link environment's voice system. Specifically, you're asked to provide regular reports that confirm the enterprise voice calls that are using the correct public switch telephone network gateways to keep costs down. What commandlet should you use? Monitoring the voice system. Test CS voice policies, test CS voice route, test CS dial plan. Test CS voice user. Well, in this case, we're going to be most concerned about the way those messages are hitting our public switch telephone gateway. So we have to worry about the routing. It's less, what's more important than dealing with the policy side of it. So that's 336. And I need to get a drink here. Sorry. .337, we're taking things out, and this is more at the architectural level. But we also start to having to deal more with the enterprise voice side of it. So what you're going to see, more about enterprise voice, 27%, network services, 26%, configuring enterprise voice, and then working with hybrid solutions, 21%, tying in with a cloud-based solution. And, of course, you get the URL for Microsoft's side of it right there as well. So, I'm going to pick up the pace here a little bit. Enterprise voice topology, you have to worry about mediation, server co-location, gateways, trunks, dependencies, usage and traffic resiliency, all of your call routing issues. Expect to see issues about configuring the dial plans, and you will have to know a little bit more about normalization than what you may have had to picked up in the 2010 Link implementation. Excuse me. And then emergency dialing and notification. the enhanced 911 rules, et cetera. Voice interoperability, SIP trunks, media gateway support, trunk configuration, translation rules, dial plans, technology options, all of those you'll want to spend a little bit of time with. Once again, using TechNet is probably going to be your best resource. Voice apps, call park response groups, private line announcement service, and then we have to worry about unified messaging as well. Dial plans, normalization rules, auto attendant, outbound dialing, placement and capacity. So one of the things that we have to worry about, if you've done, spent some time with normalization rules, it's going to come in handy because you might get a question like this. Your company has a site in Omaha, Nebraska, where all the phone numbers begin with 402-366-XXXX. All users are defined with four-digit extensions, which normalization rule is going to be required to translate if a user was to dial only the last four digits. And as you have worked with, you know that we've got to be able to manage that normalization rule, so we have to worry about pattern matching, and there we get the translation rule based on the structure that we've become used to. So the caret slash D four dollar sign translation rule plus 1402366 dollar sign one. Which of the following cannot be used as a destination when routing external calls? The PSTN gateway. You know, my experience, the PSTN gateway is probably one of the first things that you're probably going to want to be hitting in that case. Session border controller, if you've taken a look at the way the SBCs, that operates as a tie-in with the gateways. IPPBX would be another solution. So you're not going to be calling directly to a SIP trunk. That makes sense to everybody? What's that? That's pretty obvious. I mean, that was one of the more obvious ones you're ever going to come across.
I don't get that.
What's that?
I don't get that.
SIP trunk, you have to translate before you can hit the SIP trunk. You have to have a gateway to hit the SIP trunk first. Actually, I've got on this one. I've got the article.
I think it's just terminology, maybe.
I think that might be where we're having the confusion. So let me see. I've got that. I wish I knew which slide number I was on. Right here, view, notes. This article, open hyperlink, yes, and implementing SIP trunking, and I remember specifically there was an issue on this one, centralized distributed. And, of course, the one time that to implement a SIP trunk, you connect to the external interface of the mediation server to the external edge component of the ITSP. And right here, the external edge component could be a SBC router or gateway. But that's one of the things that that'll throw you off on some of these things, is that it's the Microsoft answer. Link service supports the following connection types for SIP trunking. MPLS, private network that directs and carries data from one network to another, private connection with no other traffic. That's not what I was looking for. I hope I got the right link on that.
Time on
Yeah, right. I think what I'm.
Because of SIP trunk, you would define it as a PSD gateway in the topology builder.
Right. I think, and then once again, that's Microsoft's way of handling it because you have to define the gateway. I mean, I don't think in the topology builder you're not going to see just the word SIP trunk. It's got to be defined in another fashion. And I think that's what I'm dealing with here. Let me go back.
Yeah, unless you just got a mediation server with a SIP trunk pipe straight into it.
Right. Wow, that's
compared to 336.
Got to remember who's paying my way to the conference here.
I know who wrote it, so watch what you say.
It's challenging. For me, the most difficult part of it is that I was tackling it before the release of the Microsoft official curriculum. And I had to spend... I was building a lot of my own labs to test this stuff out. And like I said, the way that I study is different from the way a lot of other people study. So when I think for that, you're not going to see that exact question, to be fair. I mean, these are all sample questions. And you're going to see questions that are like these questions. And there's going to be a lot of different things that pop up. What did I think of the exam? I'll be honest with you. I did not score a perfect score on this exam. I think the score that I got was closer to the common, the old joke about what do you call the guy that graduates bottom of his class from medical school? Doctor? This one, yeah, I barely got it my first time through it. I'm not going to, you know, hide from that one. So I may, there's probably some, I know there's questions I got wrong. And that's just it. I'm still waiting, you know, for this curriculum. I haven't had a chance to teach it yet. So, and you know, one of the things about being an MCT is that I spend almost all my time teaching. I've done some small deployments and stuff that I get done in a few days. But that's kind of the down, you know, one of the things that I talk about with my peers is that the frustration that, is anybody here at MCM? A certified master in Link?
I don't think they've been as well.
You're right. You're right. But you know what? I was talking with a guy that's a certified master in exchange last night, and he was getting ready to take the exchange 2013 exams. So, you know, they still have to take the exams too. One of the things that is a frustration on both sides of it, trainers don't have enough time to consult and do implementations, and the people that I had, I've got a big consulting company in my neck of the woods, and one of the things that they've asked me is, like, what's your biggest deployment? And I'll tell them, you know, it's only been a couple hundred users. It hasn't been anything big. And then their big complaint is that I haven't done deployments that are the size of the deployments they consult on. Well, no, because the guys that are doing those deployments aren't teaching classes. So it's kind of a common issue with trainers versus full-time people that are managing deployments. I know a lot of, you know, incredibly knowledgeable people that spend all their time doing deployments. Are you going to be able to get them in to teach a class? Well, that's not what they do. It's a very different... How do I say this? And... Well, let me ask you guys. How many of you guys want to teach a class? How many of you do you see yourself standing up in front of, you know, 12 people for 5 days straight talking about these kinds of things? For some people to drive them absolutely, that's just not what they want to do. And it's the same thing I think goes for a lot of trainers. So it's just a matter of difference of personality, I guess, and the path that's been laid out for you. See, your company has Microsoft Link Enterprise Pool deployed in your central office already, servicing the branch office users, and now wishes to provide voice high availability. Should connectivity to the central office fail, how would you accomplish this? And I dropped my, there we go. So getting back to this, once again, survivable branch appliance, the public switch telephone network, I'd be able to accomplish that, and that's the purpose of having an SBA located at a branch location, is for high availability and failover. What's the ratio of the number of mediation servers to the number of gateways? What's funny is that the documentation never says any of these things. That's one of the things that I find a little bit frustrating. What does it say in the documentation about ratio? M to N, right? So in that case, many to many. Then we start getting into the design side of it. You get network optimization, the various subsections there. It is important to know your codecs when you start talking about your network usage and making sure you can manage the amount of bandwidth that's going to the individual services. Network services for Link, we get into LIS, which we know is going to be one of those things that it's going to pop up on an exam. I don't think we have to worry about that one. CAC, port requirements, knowing which ports are open, which ones ports are going to be closed. Media bypass and DHCP. And then right here, you wish to prevent HD video from being used over your WAN link. Which setting would you adjust in your bandwidth policy defined in caller admission control? Oh, I think it's the audio limit. What do you guys think? Yeah, it sounds like audio, because, you know, high-definition audio. Yes. So obviously the video session limit on that side of it. How about which network elements can be used to correlate to physical address locations for link location information services? Choose three. So basically everything but the link server pools. You've got WAPs, LLDP ports and switches and subnets. And then ports and protocols. So we have to know which ports and protocols we have to use. In this case, you're designing a link deployment for a customer service organization. Their call center needs to be available for instant messaging conversations with as many public instant messaging providers as possible. What inbound ports will you need to configure on your external firewall to support this? Well, we know that everybody's using port 80, right? Yeah, no. So 50,061 and 5269. Get that side of it squared away. And then we start getting an enterprise voice. We have to worry about supporting call park, response groups, private lines, announcement services. You know, making sure you get all of your, call routing. We have to worry about dial plans, trunks, emergency dialing, voice routes, et cetera. Unified messaging, tying the thing in with Exchange, turning things over to Exchange, let Exchange take care of any number of different services that we normally might have directly associated with Link. I like this one. In other words, be familiar with what you need to do in Exchange, but also what you need to do in the Link control panel. But normalization rules, auto attendance, subscriber access, the call answering rules. So this one, in order to deploy the response group's service, in what order is the configuration performed? Once again, this is going to be one of those things that is probably not going to show up as an A, B, C, and D question. You're going to have the two columns, and you're going to have to drag and drop the various answers, and you'll have to do it in the right order. So when this type of thing pops up, you're going to want to take a look at TechNet and take a look at procedures that you have to follow in the order in which you have to get things done. So in that case, set up your agent groups, create and configure the queries, and then create and configure the workflows. You configure your call park application, however you find it unavailable for users, where do you enable call park for users? And once again, because it's call park, it's going to be associated with the voice policy. Telephone numbers currently stored in Active Directory may have been input in various formats. As Microsoft Link requires the E.164 format, what would the administrator configure so that these numbers can be used by the Link clients? And there we start talking about, well, we're talking about address books. So it's the address book normalization rules that pop up in there as well. Now, this is the part that I think many people are going to get a little bit frustrated with, and that's the fact that we've got to worry about integrating with other services. It's not just about Link anymore. We have to worry about what's happening in the cloud. you know, what's going to be exclusively cloud, what's going to be keeping at the local side, and then how do we have to worry about federation between the two to get things all tied in. So this part of it I know can be a little bit frustrating. So plan your online hybrid, you have to plan the online hybrid solution, dependency, SIP namespaces, access, edge server, business and user requirements, migrating to Link Online. You have to configure the clients, enable and move the users, dial plan settings, diagnosing connectivity issues, the test commandlets are all going to be there, online services, diagnostics, and logging support toolkit, the online unified messaging, the records, edge server, dial plans, manage host mail policies, voicemail policies, enabling users for hosted voicemail, creating contact objects for hosted voicemail. And then we start getting into what predefined administrative role should a user be in to assign an existing voice policy to users without granting more privileges than required. This is going to be tied in with some of the more common questions about role-based access control. And we have to set up a user administrator in this case. An organization requires a hybrid link deployment, and you've been asked to assist with the federation design. Which of the following statements applies to the design? Allowed and blocked domains must be configured in the online tenant federation settings only. Allowed and blocked domains must be configured in the on-premise, that should be premises, federation settings only. Allowed and blocked domains must be configured the same in both the on-premise and online tenant federation settings. That looks fairly good. Allowed and blocked domains can be configured in either the on-premise or tenant federation settings. And yeah, you want to make sure that they mirror each other. Let's see. Okay, so what we've talked about here are just the objectives. And one of the things that I wanted to emphasize with this is that you guys know this. You've taken exams. We can't make this kind of thing a brain dump. I wish I could tell you everything and just say, look, pass it. Go get it done. Go back to work. I'm compassionate to the experience. I don't know how you guys feel about taking certification exams. I get incredibly anxious about it to the point of, seriously, I dread having to take them. But I have to. Because it's what I do. I'm an instructor. I'm an MCT. I've got to keep my certs up to date. And I guess I'm lucky in that I found a way to study that helps me pass these things fairly consistently. But, yeah, I've had easier exams. This one's tough. These two were tough. And they're two of the toughest that Microsoft's put out there in a very long time. This entire Windows Server 2012 track with Exchange and Link is probably some of the most stressful certification exams I've ever had to take. And I've gotten lucky. It probably would have been a difference of one or two questions for me about passing or failing them. And I'm not going to blow smoke at anybody about, you know, the difficulty of these things.
You know what your passwords?
What's that?
Pass rate,
I have, nobody's told me that. I would like to know myself. I would guess it's probably, I would say it's definitely going to be, boy, I tell you what, if it's 33%.
They were saying, when I was down at PSLP training in Dallas,
uh-huh. That wouldn't surprise me. What they've done with all the certification tracks.
Yeah, Exchange is really tough.
Exchange, oh, yeah. See, and I came back into Link from the Exchange side. You know, I've done a lot of work on Exchange. Link is one that I got back into OCSR2, and then focused on Flink 2010, now back to Link 2013.
The biggest thing I took away from, like, 3.3.6, I didn't think was really that bad. I didn't think that one was that tough, but 3.3.7, though, like I said, I missed it by one question, but, you know, the biggest thing that I noticed is that the case studies that are crazy.
Oh, yeah, case studies. Yes. Right, right. Yeah. That's the kind of thing I'm not supposed to. I'm glad you're talking about it, not me. well, yeah. Jeez. I think when I was done with 337, I think I walked out of the testing center with a little trickle of blood coming out of one ear. I mean, I spontaneous cerebral implosion.
Yeah.
Enterprise voice has always kicked me a little bit because I'm a messaging guy. I'm not a convergent technologies guy. So I've seen students from both sides of it because one of my big customers is Sprint. And Sprint is a big Microsoft shop. But you get the guys that are used to the telephony side. They don't have any problems with the enterprise voice side of it. They're used to that side of it. It's the Active Directory components that blow them up. And the reverse is true as well. You get the AD guys that are used to the Exchange and used to that side of the messaging. They don't have any trouble with the AD side of it. And the PowerShell side of it. It's when they start getting an enterprise voice that blows them up. I'd love to tell you that, you know, it's all easy and it's cake, but it's not. It's not NT40 MCSE, guys. Sorry. When I reflect on which of my certs were the easiest, I'd probably have to go back to MCSE for NT40. This one, no. You're earning it. Yep. Oh, now.
Yeah.
So
this is the second round of questions. When I took a test, they were in the transition of the switch. So there was all brand new questions. And, you know, I had three case studies. Well, most people had two.
Yeah.
But they're still talking about that. They're trying to make that passive rate a little better up to your 43%.
Question.
Right.
I haven't seen it. Okay. I was working over the certification area this week, and Measure Up, Transcender, Self-Test are all behind. And I find that very frustrating. It's tremendously frustrating because I like practice tests. But no, they're not there. That's part of the challenge of it. You know, you almost have to go through and like create your own stuff. But it's hard to do. It's hard to do unless you're used to that process. One of the things that I put up here as far as breakout sessions, a lot of these have already been covered on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So you're going to want to go back and take a look at them when they show up on the TechNet site. But they do cover any number of things: monitoring, high availability disaster, enterprise voice, planning a deployment for conferencing edge, and then you get a network design and deployment strategies. As far as hands-on labs, there are some nice HOLs that they got out down there for you. Deploying persistent chat, edge, deploying Link server, which is probably the first one I'd probably do if I didn't have experience with 2013. Coexistence interoperability will help you with tying in with the hybrid side of things. And then high availability and disaster recovery. And then what else do I have here? Let's see. Go check the floor. Microsoft Link has a couple different booths down there in the right section of Hall D on the pavilion. And, oh, this one. Okay, I had to do this differently because when I did the link and did my email address, they were vanishing in that light blue background, so I had to change the background. I'm probably in trouble with somebody for doing that. But Microsoft does a pretty good job with this stuff as far as setting up their common theme. So everybody got information about the location of my slide deck and track resources. The 20336B course is out. I remember teaching A and B. A was a bit of a dog. B version, not too bad. And then 20337A, I have not had a chance to teach that one yet. I think I've got it on my schedule for the end of July. What's that? I believe that comes out the first week of July. I don't even think the course is out there yet. I'd have to double check because I've been focused on some other things the last few weeks. I've had in the month of May, I had 3 new 5-day classes in 4 weeks. So, yay. See, that's where you guys might have to catch a little bit of a break. You don't have to worry about some of those things. And combine that with end of school year stuff. I got 3 kids. So I had 3 different concerts to go to. Oh, I want to talk.
The class is I'm going to teach it next week.
Oh, it is out? Okay, you're ahead of me.
It was a little late.
Everything's running late. You know, that's the thing that's frustrating because this part of it right here is very frustrating. Transcender, Measure Up, and Self-Test software, when they become available. They're not out there yet. And, you know, it's courses like this, we need a little extra help. But they're hanging back. And right here, the best resource you can use, TechNet. Absolutely the single best resource. Other things you've got, Channel 9. Microsoft Certification and Training Resources. I'm just, you know, this is one of those default slides that they throw in at the end of it. Please fill out ComNet. Let us know what you think. I hope I've helped you guys out somewhat. I know how frustrating some of these certification tracks can be. Link and Exchange are probably two of the more frustrating ones. Although I did hear about the current SharePoint Microsoft Certified Masters track, and I tell you what, it was less than 10% pass rate on that. So I guess maybe I shouldn't feel so bad. But outside on the screen, there should be the scan. I'd like to know what you think. I hope you did okay. And what else can I show you? Right there. And I've also got it on a notepad. I think it might be easier to see on there. I just copied and pasted it. There it is. So if you got a phone handy, you want to take a picture of that, hopefully that'll help. See, that's what's funny is the last year when I did this same session on Link 2010, there were a lot more people. There was virtually every seat was full, which tells me that not a lot of people are adopting 2013 quite yet.
But the Link 2010 tests were way easier. I mean, I scored like a 970 or something.
I was in the 900s, yeah.
That was straightforward.
I think I lost, missed 2 or 3 questions. I mean, it was really straightforward, made sense, and
yeah. Well, and that's one of the reasons why I tell people you got to go read the TechNet articles because that's where the information is, and you have to take a look at the sequence that you have to do things, and you really have to spend some time with the product. You have to know Topology Builder, you have to know the planning side of it, you have to know all your ports and protocols, and this one probably more so than 2010. You've got to know your PowerShell. And you have to know arguments for the PowerShell and the order in which they appear. That part of it I find very frustrating. I think everybody does because, in the real world, we're going to use the get help command. Well, that's not available to us when we're taking a test. We have to know it. And I know that that's frustrating for everybody. I empathize, guys. I will send you all the positive energy I can as you pursue this certification. Because I like it when people get certified. I like hearing about the people that pass. It was so cool last year when I came here and I had a couple guys walk up to me and tell me that, you know, they, what I talked about helped them pass an exam. That made me feel good. I hope you guys can come up next year and say, Bob, I passed that exam. You know, that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, my former colleague wrote one of the Link 2013 exams. I was like, can you give me any tips? No. He's like, study your ass off.
Yeah. He was so he, yeah, that's the tip. That, you know, everybody's got different ways of learning, and that's why I like the idea of burying your nose in TechNet, making your own notes, and translating things into things that you understand yourself. Thanks, guys. Thanks for your patience with me. Good luck.